ghosts, have they become a cliché? Or can we once again examine this phenomena seriously? After all, isn't it really our own afterlife we're curious about? Let's delve a little deeper on Jim Harold's Ghost Insight. Welcome to Ghost Insight. I am Jim Harold and so glad to be with you today. Now, when we look at paranormal activity, we tend to look at it here in the West through Western lenses. It's kind of like our way of looking at things, our paradigm. But I think it's interesting to kind of get outside of that occasionally and look through other lenses, the way that other people look at things like ghosts and the paranormal, and if their experiences map to those in the West. And we have the perfect guest for that. Dr. Charles Emmons is a sociologist and anthropologist at Gettysburg College who has studied paranormal phenomena for 35 years. He lives in Gettysburg, PA, which, by the way, is the best place, I guess, to live if you study this kind of thing. And he is the author of a new book. Actually, it's a revised edition, Chinese Ghosts Revisited, a study of paranormal beliefs and experiences. Dr. Emmons, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you. This is going to be fun.
You made a comment when we were off air, and I appreciate it, very kind. You had heard an interview we did with Brandon Masullo, and you said, Well, we're speaking the same language, which I appreciate.
Yes.
So from your viewpoint, what is, you're kind of in a different position because a lot of people we talk to are hobbyists, maybe enthusiasts, maybe experts in the sense that they've studied this and read about a long time. Maybe they even investigate. But a lot of times you don't see people with a doctor in front of their name that are looking at this from a social science perspective, from an perspective of academia. Why is an academe interested in the paranormal?
Well, I'm interested in everything. I have a curiosity addiction. And yes, I look at it as a sociologist, but I also break all the rules. Sociologists aren't allowed to ask if paranormal phenomena actually are real. They're supposed to bracket them and say, oh, people believe this, and what kind of a social function does that have? So if I tell people that Chinese ancestor worship is connected to ghosts, that's fine. But if I want to actually find out if these experiences are real or if they're the same as other experiences that people have in the West, that is not an okay question, but that's okay. I'm interested in everything.
So the Chinese, how do they view the afterlife, the paranormal, ghosts? I know that's a big question. We could spend hours on just talking about that, but just kind of a thumbnail sketch as opposed to maybe Westerners.
Well, if you ask the Chinese government, of course, they'll tell you that ghosts don't exist,
right?
And it's terrible and everything. But actually, people in China do have high levels of paranormal experiences, as Jim McLennan has shown, another sociologist. Anyway, in traditional Chinese culture, which has not gone away, and that's really the point of the revised edition, and people are still taking this seriously because you have to say if your house had a violent death in it, that's a real estate law in the courts in Hong Kong. They've declared that you have to reveal this information, and houses that are haunted are cheaper unless you sell them to a Westerner who doesn't know anything about ghosts. But the traditional idea of ghosts is that it's connected to ancestor worship, so that your ancestors are really ghosts, and you appeal to them to help you now, in the here and now, help you to get the house, win the housing lottery in Hong Kong so you can get into subsidized housing, help your health. People take this very seriously, but they also do things for the ancestors. So it's back and forth helping each other. And people who don't have descendants to worship them are dangerous, and that's during the Hungry Ghost Festival. They roam the streets, and you have to be careful, and you put out food for them and so on. So traditionally, you take it seriously that after people die, they're in another parallel sort of universe. They're in a heaven or whatever, and they have the same needs that we do on Earth. So you have to take care of them, or they'll come back and haunt you.
That's very, very interesting. Now, tell us about the study that this book is based on, because I thought that was quite fascinating, the story back 35 years ago or so.
Yeah, you couldn't do this today, because
right.
You can't do phone interviews. 1,500 people were interviewed on the phone in Hong Kong. And I also went to high schools, and I had students, 2,000 high school students, filled out a questionnaire. So this is based on an enormous data set, 3,500 people. And it's just, you know, it's unheard of in terms of survey research in Hong Kong, but also unheard of in terms of comparisons with other cultures. And it's just, I was so fascinated by it. And so that those data show, you can show the comparisons to the United States and the UK by the questions that I asked that were similar to like Gallup poll questions and so on. And also I used parapsychological theory to see if their experiences matched the ones in the West. And astonishingly, they do match. For example, you expect ghosts to be violent in Hong Kong. They will beat you at mahjong. They will kill you. They will seduce you. All kinds of physical effects. But they don't show up in the actual experiences. Only 2 out of 176 firsthand ghost experiences that I collected showed a physical effect. And that's just like what you find in the West, that they're not physical in terms of the apparition itself. Now, sure, there are hauntings that have physical effects. There are poltergeist cases, which are, you know, a living person is the center. But, you know, but there are no, almost never do you see physical effects in the actual apparition. And so that matches the theory. This is quite an amazing finding.
Now, I want to back up a minute. You said something that's interesting, and I don't think people maybe who aren't in the social sciences realize this. You said you couldn't do this today, and there are two things that I would point out and I would ask you about. First of all, Hong Kong is under communist control, so I don't even know if they'd allow something like this. And secondly, you said you couldn't do a phone survey because, and the reason I remember this is I'm getting on in my years, and in the 80s and 90s, I took social sciences as a communication major and ended up getting my master's degree. And the lifeblood of survey research was traditional landline phone calls and phone surveys, which you know, you might as well say you use smoke signals because everybody has mobile phones. Particularly, I would think in Hong Kong, which I believe has an extremely high mobile phone adoption rate. So, this kind of outside of the sphere of the paranormal, but I mean, social science has changed a lot, and Hong Kong has changed a lot.
Right. Well, people just don't like to. They're afraid of telemarketing and. And there's so much resistance to phone interviews anymore. And I think you could do this study in terms of the government, because although the Beijing government is definitely increasingly interfering in Hong Kong politics, it's still okay to do research like this. I'm not sure that it would be okay to do research on the Falun Gong protest organization, that sort of thing. I know that the last time I was actually in Hong Kong was 1990, and already I could see college professors kowtowing to what was going to happen after 1997 and sort of self-censoring what they did. I actually published a book on Hong Kong politics in 1987, and I'm sure they have a dossier on me because I interviewed activists and so on. And if I tried to do that study today, I could get in trouble. But I think I could do an attitude survey, something like this, low profile. I don't think it'd have much political problem today. But your point is well taken.
So what are some of there's some differences. What are some of the similarities in the way that they view ghosts?
Well, the similarities are actually everything. So that, and I don't just mean that they fit the theory, you know, like they appear not to be physical. We look for, parapsychologists get excited when you have evidential cases, and they have a lot of evidential cases, which is paranormal information, things you shouldn't know about, but you do because of the apparition, and also collective apparitions, which are perfect because they show it's not just one person hallucinating. So it fits all those patterns. I also have a section on abnormal features of perception. So things like seeing only the top of the person, because that's more important to see that part. That's typical. So abnormal features of walking, all the things that show up in the Western cases show up in the Chinese cases. Really, everything is the same. Now, here's what's different. There are ancestor worship features, but they actually do not violate the theory. So, for example, people will say that ghosts come back on the 7 days after a person dies, or multiples of seven up through 49, but that doesn't actually violate the parapsychological view of it. When there's these physical effects, you'll get something like, oh, I put out peanuts on the ancestor worship altar, and later I saw that the peanuts were eaten from the inside. They were not actually cracked open. So that's a paranormal physical effect. But they didn't say, I saw a ghost pick up a peanut and crack it open, or I mean get the nut from the inside without opening it. They'll say, well, I saw ghosts floating around the altar, but they don't say they saw the ghost doing something physical that you can prove is physical.
So it wouldn't be one of our shows if we didn't talk about some ghost stories. What are some of your favorites?
Well, I think maybe my favorite one, and I'm going to quote this out of the book. The reason I like this is it's a partially collective apparition. Now, what's important about that? If it's a collective apparition, then you know multiple people are seeing it, and it's not just one person's hallucination. But if it's partially collective, that means only some of us see it, and we should have all seen it. If it was really there physically, we would have all seen it. You get my point? So there's some sort of mental phenomenon going on. Multiple people are having the experience, but not everybody. So this one I called Boy Scout Picnic. In 1973, when I was 15 years old, and this is translated from Cantonese, okay, the Chinese language spoken in Hong Kong. In 1973, when I was 15 years old, I went on a Boy Scout picnic. A whole gang of 15 or 20 of us were marching along with our leader. I was last in line. It was late in the evening, but there was moonlight. I saw two white spots approaching, self-lit, like two spotlights. And see, that happens in the Western cases too. And the idea is, it's dark. You wouldn't see it if it weren't self-lit, if it weren't lit. So your mind makes it lit. That's how it's visible. When they came close by, I could see that it was a very old couple. They had no expression on their faces. This is like what we call a dumb ghost.
Right.
Typically in hauntings, they don't interact with you. They don't act like they're not in the same space. And we're not looking at anybody. Both of them were wearing white robes. Their hair was old-fashioned and parted and short, although the woman's hair was longer than the man's. They walked very strangely. See, I found that. Abnormal features of walking. This is common. First, they would swing their arms together and then jump, the two of them at the same time. Everybody should have seen the couple, but only five or six of us claimed to have seen them. There's your partially collective. Our leader did not see them. I was very scared and turned around to look at them again when they passed by, but they were gone. There's another. See, if they were physical, they would still be there. I'm very sure of what I saw. So that's got several things in it all at once.
You talked about this maybe being something mental. I guess that gets to the question of what do you think is behind all of this? Do you, whether we're talking Chinese ghosts, American ghosts, Russian ghosts, whatever ghosts right. They are, do you believe, and I'm interested in your perspective as a social scientist, is this something from, quote, the other side? Is this some kind of mental glitch? Is it, in other words, is it kind of a materialistic explanation, or is it more of an unknown explanation that maybe there are people from the other side visiting us? What side of the fence do you come down on?
Well, you did a good job of rolling all the possible theories into a couple of sentences there.
Well, thank you.
And the way I approach it is this. First, we have to convince people that there's something actually happening here. That's our biggest job, right? To show that there's something that can't be explained by normal, so-called normal theories. And the two big things that show that are the evidential cases and the collective apparitions. So I think we've pretty well established that. I mean, I'm not, the only thing I'm sure of is that I'm not sure of anything, but I'm fairly sure that we've got this nailed now, that there, that these things happen. And I say, what I study is not ghosts, but ghost experiences. There's no doubt that people have ghost experiences. So now we have to figure out what they are. And they're so common. Paranormal experiences are so common that Andrew M. Greeley, the sociologist who was on my dissertation committee, by the way, wrote a famous article that's called "The Paranormal is Normal."
Mm-hmm.
So if you take people seriously with their experiences, there's no doubt that people have these experiences. And we also can show that they know things they shouldn't know. All right, now we're left with the big questions, as you say, is this from the other side? You know, is this spiritual? Is it a kind of telepathy? Because, you know, you talk to Brandon about that a lot. And a lot of the theories of apparitions have to do with this sort of ESP or telepathy explanation. Somebody is sending the information and somebody's getting it. So now you have to figure out, well, could it be sent by somebody who's dead? That's the key, right?
Right.
That, now you've got the supernatural explanation. Well, but if it's a haunting and the ghost is dumb, so to speak, doesn't interact with you, maybe you're just getting a residual effect. And, of course, you talk to him about that sort of thing, residual trace type explanations. What's tricky is when it's a haunting, in other words, a place that's haunted, not just a person. Now, ghosts are attached to people and places. If it's your Uncle Harry, you can see Uncle Harry anywhere, like looking out the window of a plane. You can see Uncle Harry's floating outside the plane, you know. So you're connected to Uncle Harry. But in a haunting, the way most people use the term, it's the place, like you talked about Gettysburg. So when something happens and many people see it in the same place in Gettysburg, and I have cases like that I can give you if you want to talk about it, now you're thinking, okay, it's attached to that place, and maybe the person who had that experience is long gone, and there's nothing supernatural about it. So how would we try to establish that it's supernatural? That's the hard part, isn't it? And the main sticky point is what they call the super ESP theory, that mm-hmm. you could know anything in the universe by clairvoyance. It doesn't have to be a message from someone. I study spirit mediums, and that's a big question all the time. Is the spirit medium contacting somebody who's dead, or just can know anything that ever happened through clairvoyance? I'll stop there for you to respond before I go any further.
Well, to me, this is interesting because, for example, the idea of a psychic. Now, there's a thought out there that all psychics are frauds. Now, I don't subscribe to that. I believe that there are people who have abilities that we don't understand and can tell us some very stunning things. The question becomes, and I don't have an answer for it, is even the psychic themselves, could they possibly, and I'm not saying this is the case, but is it possible even they are being unknowingly deceived by this, thinking that they're getting messages from the other side where maybe they're feeding back. Let's say that somebody has lost, let's use an example, a German Shepherd dog. And there are people out there who claim to be pet psychics.
Yeah.
And perhaps they meet with this person in all goodwill and they believe they have a gift. And they say, well, I see a German Shepherd coming through. Did you recently lose a beloved German Shepherd? Well, maybe they're not picking it up from the universe or from the other side or from that German Shepherd's ghost, but they're picking it up from the pet owner. And the pet owner is thinking of that German Shepherd and hoping that they'll come through. The psychic, in all good faith, is feeding this back to him, thinking they're getting it from the other side, when in fact they're just basically literally reading the person's mind.
Right. I deal with that a lot. My wife Penelope and I wrote a book called Guided by Spirit, A Journey into the Mind of the Medium, 2003. It's coming out again, a new edition, this spring.
Oh, another interview.
Yeah, with visionary something. Sorry, I forgot for the moment. Visionary Living Limited. That's the publisher. And so
is that Rosemary?
Is
that Rosemary Ellen Guy?
Rosemary.
Yes, she's fantastic.
Yes, she's our editor. We're almost done editing. Guided by Spirit. Okay, I know Penelope. She's a fabulous medium, and I know she's not a phony. Now, could she be deceived about where this information is coming from? Yes. However, Julie Beischel is a good example. She's studying spirit mediums in the laboratory, and she asked them to do a psychic reading and a spirit medium reading, and MRIs show that their thought processes are different. Something different is happening in their brain when they do the psychic from when they do the spirit medium. That's fascinating. Also, it's interesting, I listen to the mediums. A lot of them say they can tell a difference. They can't always tell a difference. But Penelope, my wife Penelope, she says, I definitely know this is the best spirit I've ever communicated with. I think that's evidence, experiential evidence. Also, of course, you look for things like drop-in communicators. You probably heard about that, right?
Where yes.
People are doing a seance, and then, like in Iceland, this character comes in and said, I want my leg back. And nobody knew this guy. It just drops into the seance, and they end up investigating, and they find the guy's leg in a wall. I mean, this is just totally bizarre. There's no reason why anybody would have picked up on that. It's easier to imagine the motivation is sent by the dead person who's missing a leg. You see what I mean?
Yes. Yes, I do. I know.
So there's a lot of, that's one tactic. There are a number of other tactics for figuring out whether it's spiritual. I have another book called You Can Get Guided by Spirit and Science and Spirit on Amazon. Science and Spirit, Penelope and I wrote, deals with all these theories of, is there evidence for consciousness after death? And Russell Targ, you probably heard of Russell Targ, he's
yes.
My favorite author on the paranormal because he's so fun. But Russell Targ, one of the people I interviewed, he gives his gold standard case of showing that there is actually something coming from the other side. And that's the case of the chess game. I don't know if you heard about this, where there was a dead chess master by the name of Marachi, who was contacted by a spirit medium and asked Marachi to play a game with a living chess master. And this happened over years because they did it by mail. And the medium knew little to nothing about chess, but the Marachi's playing this game with a living chess master, second in the world, I forget his name at the moment. And Russell Targ's brother-in-law, by coincidence, is the famous American chess guy.
Bobby Fischer?
Bobby Fischer, yeah. Now, Bobby Fischer is dead now, but Bobby Fischer, Russell Targ's brother-in-law, took a look at the play of the game and said, that is a high-level chess game. And anybody who can go that many moves with this living chess master has to be a fabulous chess player. So knowing how to play chess, that's not something a medium can do. So it's evident, pretty evident, that the spirit is the one directing the play of the game. You see what I mean?
Yes, that's an interesting, and I have heard of that experiment. I couldn't remember the detail or when I heard of it, but I have heard of that before, and that is a fascinating one. Well, I have.
Yeah, that was studied a lot in the parapsychology journals, and so Russell Targ looked at that, and I have an account of that in the book Science and Spirit, and he also talks about it on a documentary I made, which you can get on. If you just put in my name and Science and Spirit, and Cupola for Gettysburg College, you can watch it for nothing.
Well, there you go. You have to check that out. I have to ask you, because we love these on my programs, another ghost story. Do you have another ghost story for us from your book?
Oh, yeah. Maybe you would like, this is one, because we talked about Gettysburg. Now, this is the combination. This is more like a spirit medium thing.
Sure.
But since you talked about what happened at Gettysburg, that example that you gave when you were talking to Brandon was very good. So you know about Little Round Top in Gettysburg, that it was a crucial part of the battle, and Joshua Chamberlain kind of saved the day there. It's in the movie Gettysburg. So Penelope and I went up to Little Round Top, and she started picking things up. And I can't read this whole thing. I'm just looking at it. So just give you a couple of excerpts. When we were going up the hill, she told me that she was aware of a spirit present who wanted to talk, and he wanted to write to Sarah. Okay. And she said she felt a male spirit close behind her. I put my hand behind her back. I could feel there was heat in behind her back. Okay. Now, as we went up there, she starts having trouble walking, trouble in her left hip and right ankle. And she starts looking over a little round top, and she said she could see it the way it was in that time, which was July of 1995, and now it had been in July of 1863. We were there on the anniversary of the battle, and she could see it look different on and off. And what she got was that the spirit was looking through her eyes to see this. And she didn't know anything about Joshua Chamberlain or anything like that, but it was evident to me that she was talking about Joshua Chamberlain. Now, I called up my friend Mark Nesbitt. He's written these books, Ghosts of Gettysburg. Mm-hmm. And Mark Nesbitt, coincidentally, was writing a book on Joshua Chamberlain right at that time. And he got all excited. The details I told him, he said, "She said that?" And he said that that the Sarah was actually the name of Chamberlain's mother and of his sister, and that the parts of her body where she was having trouble, left hip and right ankle, were the places that he'd been wounded in the Civil War. And so there's a whole bunch of evidential things like that that she got. Okay, and plus the fact I know Penelope, she's not a hoax. So anyway, we hadn't written this up anywhere. But later on, I got a contact, I got an email, I think it was, from a woman who had had a very similar experience. Now, the reason why I get people contacting me is I'm on this program called Ghosts of Gettysburg. It's been on cable like 80 times.
Right.
And so I'm in that quite a bit. And this woman, usually I get stuff like, here's my ghost experience in Gettysburg, right?
Mm-hmm.
But only once did I get somebody who said they'd been possessed like this, that they felt like a spirit had gone inside them and tried to look at what was happening. And this woman had the same experience that Penelope did, pretty much, except it was about 100 yards away. And it was over by the St. Vincent Memorial. Well, so I got Penelope in contact with this woman to compare experiences. And the difference was that the other woman was frightened by it, whereas Penelope was just kind of awed about it. And then I found out something else. Mark Nesbitt said that Joshua Chamberlain, who was a professor in Bowdoin College in Maine, would, after the Civil War, he would come back to visit Gettysburg on the anniversary of the battle. This was the anniversary of the battle, both for Penelope and for the other woman. The other woman was also in a different time, different year, during July 1-2-3, on the battlefield at Little Round Top. So that is just too much of a coincidence, you know what I mean?
Yes, it certainly sounds like it is. Now, I want to ask your opinion about this coming from the world of academia.
Yeah.
You know, there are people on the, quote, let's say, true believer side, who say, these academic types, we don't need I'm kind of dating myself, slide rules and computers and test tubes. And, you know, this stuff is spiritual. There's no place for science in it. On the other hand, you'll get people who are in the, quote, debunker skeptical camp, and I use skeptic with a big S, who say, there's nothing to any of this. It's a waste of our time to study from any kind of sociological or any kind of social science perspective. It's just a lot of bunk, and we're just wasting our time. Let's get on to more important matters. And then there's everybody else in between. Where do you think the relationship should lie? Where does Dr. Emmons lie in terms of that continuum?
Well, if I have to make a choice, I'm a scientist. Now, most people don't think that because, he writes about goofy things like ghosts and spirit mediums UFO researchers. I have a book on that too. So I respect people who are intuitive, and I have become intuitive during the process of my study. So I became a spirit medium so I would understand what it was like. And I figure if I can do it, anybody can do it. I've become a healer. So I've experienced these things because I want to know how it works. But then my intuitive side is expanding so that Penelope is mostly intuitive and a little bit scientific. I am mostly scientific and a little bit intuitive. But even as a scientist, I know that it's unscientific to ignore people's experience. And that's why a bunch of us are in what I call the experience movement. There's a group called Exploring the Extraordinary, mostly in England. And there's a journal called Paranthropology. And we really emphasize the importance of listening to people's experience. Because if you're studying consciousness, we can't find your consciousness in your brain by using an MRI. So if you want to know about consciousness, you're going to have to listen to people's experiences. That's the really best source of data. Now, of course, we don't take everything at face value, but we listen to people's experiences. And so it's unscientific to reject things that turn out to be evidential based on people's experience. So I understand the people who don't want anything to do with science, they just want to experience it. That's okay. That's a way of knowing. And if they want it for entertainment, they just want to go on a ghost walk and be entertained, that's fine with me. But I'm really interested in the science. And the people who are the super skeptics, the debunkers, they're not doing what is real science. Real science is an open mind. I mean, you may not want to fund it. You may not want to do it yourself. But to ridicule it, as J. Allen Hynek said, ridicule is not part of the scientific method.
I like that. I like that a lot. Well, let me throw something out there, and I want to get your perspective as a scientist on it, because this has been kind of my thought. And even though I certainly don't have the background you did, as I said, I went to school and I kind of was on parallel tracks. I was one of those people who was on the academic side and the practical side. I did all the stuff up to the master's degree and got the master's degree in communication. But all, at the same time, I was a broadcast student. So I kind of lived in both worlds. It was really kind of interesting to see you were in the same department and people looked askance at each other depending on what side of the fence. I didn't really belong to either one, probably more to the broadcasting side. But anyway, to me, let me throw this thought out there. And I've used this many times. I may have even used it in the Brandon Show, because a lot of times when this comes up, I use this analogy. DNA. In 1900, we didn't know DNA existed. We didn't have the technology. We didn't have the techniques to find something like that. And now we very much know, and the genome has been sequenced, and we use it for all these great things to fight disease or solve crimes or all that. Now, we didn't know it existed, but it was there the whole time. We just didn't have a way to pick up on it. Now, if you would have asked a scientist back then about the ether, yeah, maybe. But my point is this, is that is it possible what we are seeing with, quote, the paranormal is something that is very measurable, but just not by the techniques and the technology that we have in 2017?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's actually what most people think who take some sort of a scientific view. Say, my research now is on integrative medicine or alternative medicine, and I interview practitioners who do spiritual healing and so on. And most of them, when you ask about the paranormal, they say, that's just the scientific stuff we don't understand yet. And a great example of that is the placebo effect. It used to be just a laughable thing, and they'd say it's all in your head, right? Or if it makes you feel better, fine. And we know that sometimes people can just psychologically trick themselves into feeling better. But the recent studies in placebo last few years are astonishing. They show that your brain subconsciously generates chemicals that have a real physical effect on your body.
Very interesting stuff. A great guest, Dr. Charles Emmons. The book is Chinese Ghosts Revisited, a study of paranormal beliefs and experiences. One last question, and then I want you to share where people can find all of your information. There was a previous edition of this book. What has been added to this new edition?
Well, I went online and I asked people to give me more experiences. I didn't get a lot, but there are some. There are a few new experiences in the book. I also comment on how my attitude about the whole thing is different and sort of reprocess some of the things I said throughout the book. But I also found some interesting things that show that ghosts are still really important in Hong Kong. And one is this thing about the haunted properties that I mentioned briefly earlier. There are actually websites you can go on to find these Hongzhe, which is the Cantonese name for these haunted properties, and figure out where they are, and then maybe you get a discount because they're haunted. Well, because of all the Hong Kong real estate price pressures, the discount is getting smaller, so people are more desperate to find a place. But there are still some outfits where they'll buy up these properties and then sell them to unsuspecting foreigners who don't believe in ghosts. So this is still taken seriously in the real estate market. Also, I found stuff about how tourism was affected by Chinese ghost beliefs. So any place where the tsunami had caused damage, the Chinese tourism, the people, Chinese tourists wouldn't go there as much because they believed that ghosts will hang around water and they can kill you and then, you know, drown you so that they can go on to the other life instead of being a hungry ghost. Things in China, not just Hong Kong, the rest of China, people digging up corpses to be used in ghost marriages. It's fascinating because we assume in the West that everybody's going to become Western and modern and forget their traditional culture, and that is anything but true. Ghosts are still alive in Hong Kong.
Well, and I'm so glad that we have Dr. Charles Emmons to catalog them for us. Dr. Emmons, where can people find the book and more information about everything you do?
Well, there's any moment, you know, you can buy Chinese Ghosts Revisited in Hong Kong in the bookstores right now, and it's available in Australia. But there's this slow boat from China coming to the U.S., and the UK, and they're saying on Amazon in both the UK and the US that it's available by December 31st. You can pre-order it on there, and you'll get it probably pretty soon. It's supposed to be here by now. So that's Chinese Ghosts Revisited. Guided by Spirit, the thing about spirit mediums, is available now on Amazon, but it's also coming out in a new edition in the spring. And then Science and Spirit, I think we may eventually do a new edition of that too, but that's available on Amazon. That's about consciousness, science, and spirit. Well, you can look me up and find stuff at Gettysburg College about what I do. If you're interested in exploring the extraordinary, this group of us that, especially in England, that are doing research like that, you want to look up the Jack Hunter's journal called Paranthropology, then you'll see the people that I hang around with.
Well, we are so glad that we got to hang out with Dr. Charles Emmons a little bit. Thank you so much for joining us today on Ghost Insight.
Thank you, Jim. I knew it was going to be fun.
There you go. It certainly was. And thank you for tuning in to Ghost Insight. We hope that you will keep exploring the mystery of the other side. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.